You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Another hacked broadcast in a hybrid war, hunting forward as an exercise in threat intelligence collection and sharing, cyber threats to the U.S. midterm elections, phishing for cryptocurrency, fake crack delivers a malicious payload to the unwary, vacations are back, so is travel-themed fish bait. Ann Johnson from Microsoft shares insights on the trends she's tracking here at RSA. Johannes Ulrich brings highlights from his RSA conference panel discussion. And Emotet returns in the company of some old familiar criminal collaborators. From the RSA conference in San Francisco, where I've left my heart and a good bit of my expense account, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, June 9th, 2022. Another broadcast has been hacked in the course of Russia's hybrid war. The last such interference was in the Russian interest and interrupted the televised presentation of the Ukraine-Wales match in the World Cup qualifying round. This most recent incident appears to be the work of pro-Ukrainian hacktivists. BBC reporter Francis Scar tweeted that a news broadcast carried by the Russian radio station Kommersant FM was interrupted to play the Ukrainian patriotic song "Oh, the Red Viburnum in the Meadow." The Washington Post adds that the feed was also interrupted with an anti-war song. The station has resumed normal operations and said it was investigating the incident. Sky News, following up its interview with U.S. Cyber Command's General Nakasone, concentrates on a discussion of what hunt forward means in the context of cyber conflict. It involves the collection of threat intelligence in friendly cooperating networks, finding malware samples and other evidence of hostile activity, and sharing that intelligence to inoculate friendly networks against such attacks. General Nakasone said, "This ability for us to work at the behest of a foreign government to go and hunt with them on their networks, then releasing the information. We have released over 90 different malware samples to a series of private sector cybersecurity firms. What does that do? It provides inoculation for all of us that operate in the domain. And I think that's an example of where this public-private partnership is so important." General Nakasone also credited Ukraine with considerable resilience in cyberspace. He said, "One of the things that we certainly learned is the importance that the Ukrainians have placed on having a resilient network. If all that's said in terms of what's gone on in this conflict, one of the things that I think is sometimes missed is that the Ukrainians have maintained their internet and being able to communicate, and this is a great tribute to them." The U.S. midterm elections will be held this coming November, and experts are outlining the cybersecurity risk to those elections. At the RSA conference yesterday, CyberScoop reports, industry experts reminded election officials that phishing and email doxing had been major threats in 2016, and that those shouldn't be overlooked in the current election season. But the way the threat landscape has shifted suggests that election officials should be particularly alert for ransomware attacks. Among the U.S. federal agencies that are involved in securing the vote, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has the leading role. NSA's cybersecurity director, Rob Joyce, said that his organization would be supporting CISA. Joyce said, "The worry in all of election security is trust and confidence that we've delivered a safe and secure election. And if you know if elections are subject to ransomware or if there's a botnet that runs a denial of service, what you'll find is that's probably going to, in this day and age, escalate to be an issue of trust." He pointed out that working against botnets and ransomware were squarely in NSA's wheelhouse. So Fort Meade's support can be expected to work primarily against those two classes of threat. This morning, Proofpoint published a study of criminal attempts against cryptocurrency holdings. They divide the operations into three categories: cryptocurrency credential harvesting, cryptocurrency transfer solicitation, and commodity stealers that target cryptocurrency values. As is so often the case, the tools for this kind of cybercrime are traded in the underworld's criminal-to-criminal markets. Phishing kits, prepackaged sets of files that contain all the code, graphics, and configuration files to be deployed to make a credential capture webpage, are popular offerings. Fake Crack, a criminal operation that distributes malware to its victims' devices, works by offering a shady come-on, free cracked software. Avast explains that the campaign is designed to compromise and steal two classes of sensitive data: personal information and cryptocurrency holdings. It's another reason to avoid gray market software. Bitdefender reports that travel-themed spam has been seen hitting users since March 2022 and has been primarily seen targeting the United States, Ireland, India, and the United Kingdom. The spam can be found in the form of ads and phishing emails, with the emails containing buzzwords related to summer vacation and many well-known airlines. The researchers also found that malicious domains and URLs are in play. These are used to trick victims into downloading infected invoices and credit card transactions. The fish bait is topical. Not only is the summer travel season upon us, but the pandemic has abated enough to render vacation travel more feasible than it has been for the last two summers. Deep Instinct reported today that Emotet has seen a resurgence in 2022. Emotet reemerged in late 2021 and has seen a 27-fold increase in detections in early 2022. Companies in Japan were targeted in phishing campaigns utilizing Emotet in February and March of this year, and more regions have been found to be targets in April and May, including Italy and the United States. The TrickBot gang has been observed helping Emotet deploy to infected devices to download the new variants of the malware. Deep Instinct writes, "The threat actors behind Emotet have been credited as one of the first criminal groups to provide malware as a service. They successfully utilized their mass to create a massive botnet of infected systems and sold access to third parties, an enterprise that proved so effective it was soon being used by criminal entities such as the Ryuk and Conti ransomware gangs. Emotet also has a history of collaborating with TrickBot, famous for their info-stealing Trojan, and CackBot, another well-known banking Trojan. So it seems that old gangs never or rarely die. They just fade into rebranding or disperse into other criminal crews." And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show.
One of the highlights of the RSA conference is running into friends, new and old. Ann Johnson is a corporate vice president at Microsoft and host of Afternoon Cyber Tea right here on the CyberWire Network. She dropped by our meeting space at the conference to share her thoughts on the show.
You know, RSA conference, and this is my 21st year at RSA conference. So let me give you one side note. Because it's June and not February, the weather is outstanding. It's not raining. It's been a lovely week. But
right.
That aside, the vibe feels much the same. I think it's a smaller conference this year because the date changed and people are still coming out of COVID and thinking about travel, but the vibe is still the same. You still have a bunch of passionate industry professionals who are dedicated to their mission and trying to solve really hard problems and having really deep conversations as late as like 10, 11 o'clock at night. You know, it is a wonderful community, as you know, and everyone, you know, I'm seeing lots of friends on the street, people I haven't seen in a few years, and it just feels wonderful to be here.
Yeah. As you walk around, what sort of trends are you noticing? You know, we've had years where everything was artificial intelligence and then years where it was the human element. And any idea what this year's theme is?
Oh, yeah. It's the year of XDR. I have seen window storefronts, sidewalks, every bit of branding. I was joking with a friend in the industry, and I don't drink alcohol, but I said I'll take a drink of ginger ale or Diet Coke every time I see a XDR sign, you know, and you can have a shot of beer or whatever it is.
Right. You have to take frequent bathroom breaks if you do.
That's exactly right. But I think that, you know, it's the year of XDR, but again, trying to solve really hard problems. If you don't have that visibility end-to-end across your estate that XDR can give you, like Microsoft XDR, we give it to you across our platform and with third-party solutions, you can't solve hard problems because you're not seeing. The biggest problem customers try to solve is visibility. And theoretically, that's what XDR is going to bring to them, is that promise of visibility and correlation of threats across the entirety of your environment.
Is now the right time for XDR? Let me say that another way. Why XDR at this moment, having the popularity it does?
I think it's because a lot of organizations are now both hybrid and cloud. Mm. And so visibility becomes a really different conversation for them, right? They're trying to figure out what's still in their estate on premises, and then they're trying to figure out what they have in the cloud. And that dream of us, you know, I'll use the Microsoft example, right? Microsoft Defender for endpoint, looking at what is on premises or on your endpoints, as opposed to Microsoft Defender for cloud or Microsoft Defender for identity, we can look across the entirety of your estate and say, these threats are coming in from the cloud, these threats are coming in from on premises, and we can correlate those. And that's, I believe, why there is such this impetus for it now, is because customers' estates have gotten much more complex. In addition to that, threat actors have ramped up and have figured out where the soft, chewy center is, where the soft, chewy center is external to you in a cloud, where the soft, chewy center is still on premises. So being able to detect really quickly. Time to detection is the most important thing, and XDR should be able to reduce your time to detection, which gives you a better opportunity to defend your environment.
As I'm wandering around the show floor here, I'm seeing a lot of young, fresh faces, people who are looking to find their place in the community here. Are you seeing the same thing, and what kind of energy do you see them bringing to things?
I had so much fun last night. I was one of the experts at the RSA Scholars Dinner.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Terrific.
Yeah. So the RSA Scholars Dinner, we bring in college students who are mostly postgraduate. They're, masters or PhD students. I had so much fun with them. I actually said to one of the students, you know, he was talking about how he's writing CTFs, how he's helping write grants for students to go to cybersecurity education. And I'm like, when I was in college, I was thinking about where the next party was. I wasn't thinking about, like, seriously.
Yeah, I'm with you.
They are so committed. Remember, when we were in college, cybersecurity wasn't an industry, right?
No, it wasn't, no.
But they were so passionate. I was talking to somebody who was doing embedded work on embedded systems and risks for nuclear power plants. These kids, they're going to save us all because they are so passionate, committing, and they're digital natives. So they're so much further ahead than we were in understanding the landscape.
I think another element, for me anyway, is I'd like to get the word out that for those folks who are coming up, don't be shy. Come up and introduce yourself. If you know, and I know you, this is something you feel as well. You're willing to take the time to have those conversations, help people along the way.
You know, I was talking to a member of my team this morning, and I said, if someone is, and I'll say it, brave enough to walk up to me, I'm going to give them time.
Right.
If you want to send me a LinkedIn message, I'm going to give you a few minutes. Maybe ultimately, because I like to do quality things like you, right? So maybe if I feel like I don't have enough time, I'm going to ask you to meet with someone after that. But I'm going to give you time. I want to get the next generation passionate. You know, I've been doing this for over 20 years. You've been doing it for a long time. I want the next generation to be as passionate as we are because they're going to have harder problems to solve and they're going to come with fresh ideas. And we need fresh ideas.
You are the host of the podcast Afternoon Cyber Tea. Can you give us a preview? What's coming up there?
Yeah. So Afternoon Cyber Tea is, I talk about it in the terms of I like to humanize cybersecurity. I like to bring on really interesting guests. So we have a really interesting guest coming up who is not in the cybersecurity industry. He is actually in the media and entertainment industry, but he is going to talk about an initiative he has started. It's based in Tulsa called Black Tech Street to get folks into technology careers. So he's going to talk about how he has, you know, stepped out of a little bit of the media entertainment industry to really invest in making this a reality. So we have guests like that. We have industry luminaries on. You know, we have up-and-comers. We love to have up-and-comers on the show. Talk about young talent. We like to give visibility to somebody who's just starting out. So it is probably one of my favorite things to do. And, of course, it's hosted on CyberWire.
It is our honor to do so. Ann Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
That's Ann Johnson from Microsoft.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Johannes Ulrich. He is the Dean of Research at the SANS Technology Institute and also the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast. Johannes, always great to welcome you back.
Yeah, good to see each other in person this time.
I know. We are here at the RSA conference face-to-face, which is certainly a treat. You just finished a presentation here at RSA. Can you give us a little overview? What was the presentation about?
Yes, I was really part of a panel with Ed Skotis, Katie Nichols, Heather Mihalik, and Rob Lee. And we sort of always try to summarize in once a year at RSA what sort of the bigot hacks are that we see coming. So it's not just looking backwards as what they are right now. Part of it is that as well, but also a little bit looking forward.
So what are the things on the horizon for you all?
Well, for example, Katie talked about that living off the cloud idea. It's something I've certainly observed, like when we look at the reports we're getting in with Storm Center and such, where people are using cloud services against you, where they're using services like NCroc or even like simple things like Dropbox and such to exfiltrate data, to use it as a command control channel. Because from the network point of view, that blends in really nicely with the normal traffic that you're seeing.
because so much is coming and going from the cloud and everyday operations, it's sort of masked by default?
Correct. And these are services that have legitimate uses too, so you can't just outright block them.
I see.
Or if you block them, then you have angry users. That
right.
Also not so nice.
Right. Angry users are the bane of security practitioners everywhere. What other things did you all discuss?
Yeah, I talked a little bit about how actually the infrastructure you're building for backups could potentially be used against you.
Hmm.
Because if you think about it, you're installing agents on all of your endpoints to collect the data that you are backing up. You're typically exfiltrating it to some kind of cloud service.
Right.
So what about an attacker that will just take that over and configure it for you? Now, not necessarily how you intend to configure it, but use that same software to steal your data and just send it to a different cloud endpoint. In particular, since a lot of these cloud systems have had vulnerabilities in the past, so it's not necessarily that they're foolproof either.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just not configured right because it's boring. Backups are boring. So
right.
That's why they're often ignored until you actually need them. And they're also like your last line of defense for ransomware in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly if you're looking at the modern ransomware that often has of the extortion component to it, they'll just take the data and maybe even use then the endpoints, the software that you installed on your clients as part of a backup system to do some of the encryption for you because they often have encryption capability because encrypted backups are good.
Right.
Just you usually like to have the clear text version around as well.
Well, and is this also a matter of, from the user's point of view, that it appears as though your backup software is doing everything that you configured it to do? It's sending stuff off somewhere to a cloud and it's easy to overlook which cloud where?
Exactly. And you know, the attacker may even use the same cloud as you're using, so that makes it even more difficult. And because you're typically dealing with a lot of data, you often, again, exempt it from network monitoring, for example, because you don't want to bog down your network monitoring solution with lots of traffic that you really don't really care about because you know it's just that backup software. It's going from your backup server to that S3 bucket or whatever, but really all you're often caring about is that it's going to Amazon or whatever service you configured.
What are your recommendations then? I mean, given that backups are boring, how do you prioritize, give them the attention they deserve?
Well, I always say as a security practitioner, I like boring because when it gets exciting, it's usually not that good.
Right.
yeah, give them the extension they deserve. That's really what it comes down to. And review configurations, monitor configurations. Like, how do you change management on backup configurations? Who has access to those processes and is allowed to make or authorized to make changes? So really by tying them more into your overall security practices, that's a good start. And of course, you know, keep that stuff updated like everything else.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of those one-off solutions. So it's not like your Windows updates where you have like, you know, thousands of them. And it's not as mechanical as that. But don't ignore it.
Any other particular items from the presentation that deserves attention?
Yeah, we had two more. So Heather Mihalik, she was talking about stalkerware, which is like a huge issue.
Mm.
Also like some of the more advanced exploits that you have here against mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
NSO Group, even though they are sort of fading away, but their exploits, their tools are sticking around. And then Rob Lee was talking about some of the attacks against satellite systems that we have seen in Ukraine. Now, a lot of has been written about now how it is affected or didn't affect it, really didn't affect sort of the wind power systems in Germany and such. But one sort of not well-publicized effect of this was that actually these communication systems, the Ukrainian army used in part of its sort of artillery targeting systems where someone at the front line could send a message back that they found some Russian tank or something like this. And the way Rob describes, like an Uber for artillery, where then the system automatically found the closest artillery battery to
right.
them, launch shells at them, which, you know, now you have sub-minute kind of response times. And that was shut down by shutting down those Viacom modems.
Mm-hmm.
Where then, of course, Elon Musk stepped in.
Right. right.
and gave right. them his satellite system, which sort of was basically private sector now fulfilling an important military role.
Right.
Which
things get a little fuzzy now, don't they?
Things get fuzzy, and now it's sort of part of Chinese military doctrine to, hey, if you ever fight the Ukraine, not the Ukraine, the US, the first thing we probably want to do is take out SpaceX yeah? mm-hmm. or Starlink. You have this, we always had this when it comes to cyber, where there is no clear delineation between sort of you know, private industry and government. Most government networks use privately owned or commercial connectivity. They're not right. usually running their own wires.
Right.
And this becomes really obvious here when it gets to space, and which is sort of literally now the new high ground in warfare. Can't get any higher than to some satellite.
Yeah, yeah. Geosynchronous orbit yeah. or whatever. Yeah.
And if you sort of look at some of the news from Ukraine, how effectively this is sometimes used, sort of the connectivity between drones and artillery, sort of this immediate feedback and targeting.
Right, right. Well, I have to say it's great to be back here in person to see people face to face, and delighted that you made time for us today. Johannes Ulrich, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Rachel Gelfand, Liz Irvin, Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karp, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabe, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Ivan, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.